question before you is, should we be doing expedited partner therapy, or EPT, for men who have sex with men? I'm going to give you all just a few moments to go ahead and cast your vote. We'll fix that on the next slide. Should we be doing expedited partner therapy for men who have sex with men is the question. Everyone voted? Yell no if you're still working through it. Okay. Let's see where folks are.
Jono says they're monitoring the CDC employees to see how they vote. Just thought I'd let you know.
There we go. Wow. Okay. So it's a very slanted audience. Someone's going to have a difficult time. All right, so let me introduce our debater. So first up is going to be Dr. Jono Merman, who's arguing in favor of the question. He's the director of the National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention at the CDC. From 2009 to 2013, he was director of the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention at CDC, leading the agency's domestic HIV prevention activities. He also served as the director of CDC Kenya for 3 years and the director of CDC Uganda for 7 years, where he oversaw the collaborative initiation, expansion, and evaluation of infectious disease activities, including HIV prevention and care programs, studies of behavioral prevention, prevention of opportunistic infections, economic and policy analyses, and formative and operational studies evaluating the effectiveness of antiretroviral therapy. Arguing against the question is Dr. Matt Golden, and he's the director of the Public Health Seattle and King County HIV-STD program, a professor of medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine, and the director of the UW Public Health Capacity Building Center. He received his BA in history from Grinnell College and his MD and MPH from Hopkins, and completed a residency in internal medicine and a fellowship in infectious diseases at the University of Washington. His research seeks to integrate public health practice with operational research in the area of HIV-STD, and he also completed clinical infectious disease fellowships at the Brigham and Women's Massachusetts General Hospital, and combined partner services for gonorrhea and chlamydial infections, HIV partner services, and the use of field outreach to improve the HIV care continuum. You know who these gentlemen are, so Jono, please.
Good luck, son. Okay, thank you, Bill, for inviting me to participate, and for Sevgi for helping to think about the topic. This topic is timely. The issue is important. The need is urgent, and my opponent is weak. So during this talk, I will highlight that chlamydia and gonorrhea incidence is rising with a growing proportion of infections among MSM, that EPT, expedited partner therapy, is associated with an increased proportion of sexual partners receiving treatment and a decreased incidence of reinfection. I will posit that there is no biological reason that expedited partner therapy should not benefit MSM equivalently to heterosexual men and women. And I will explain why concerns about a so-called missed opportunity for diagnosing HIV and syphilis hurts men and is theoretically and practically nonsensical. And I will conclude that good clinical care, sound public health, and strong ethical standards require us to act now. First, annually, there are 1.4 million reported cases of chlamydia, 350,000 reported cases of gonorrhea, and nationally, chlamydia and gonorrhea rates are increasing. What we are doing now works, but it doesn't work enough to turn the tide on STDs in the nation. So Dr. Golden, he will tell you that gonorrhea and chlamydia infection do not matter for gay and bisexual men. But au contraire, they do. Just look at these photos. If you even feel a slight bit of squeamishness, just now looking at pharyngitis, disseminated gonococcal infection, which kills you, urethritis, proctitis, and cervicitis, then you know these infections are bad. And they have potentially serious health outcomes. Reactive arthritis, epididymitis, pharyngitis, infertility, chronic pelvic pain. And treatment works. It cures infection. It prevents over 50% of pelvic inflammatory disease. It reduces ectopic pregnancy, and treatment prevents transmission to others. Lastly, sexually transmitted diseases cost the nation $2.4 billion in direct and indirect costs to the nation. So the work of everyone in this room saves the nation lives and money. In addition, STDs are issues of health inequity. Chlamydia in African Americans is 6 times, in American Indian and Alaskan Natives 4 times, and in Hispanics 2 times more common than among white Americans. Gonorrhea in African Americans is 11 times, American Indian and Alaskan Natives 4 times, and Hispanics 2 times whites. And 25% of new gonorrhea cases are in men who have sex with men, who comprise only 2% of the national population. And please note that a large proportion of infections among MSM are pharyngeal and rectal, which are very, very often missed because those sites are not swabbed and tested, which means if we do not use presumptive treatment, these men are told that they are STD-free, when in fact they are getting sick and spreading chlamydia and gonorrhea to their loved ones. So, what is expedited partner therapy? It's the practice of treating sex partners of persons with STDs without intervening medical evaluation or prevention counseling. It is usually patient-delivered, whereby index patients provide medication or prescriptions to their partners. It is a useful alternative when a partner is unable or unlikely to seek care because only 25% to 40% of named partners are treated with routine referral, and often there is even a lower treatment rate with MSM. Okay, does EPT work to prevent reinfection? Yes! Overall, 27% reduction in persistent or reinfection in a meta-analysis. Does EPT work to increase treatment? Absolutely. Overall, there's a 44% increase in partners treated when EPT is used. Is there a community-wide benefit from implementing an EPT program? Yes! The proportion of cases with partners treated increased from 39% to 58% with institution of a county-wide EPT program. And the population-level impact from a stepped-wedged, randomized controlled trial in Washington State of EPT and partner services showed increased patients receiving EPT from 18% to 34%. Increased persons receiving partner services from 25 to 45%, and an overall 10% reduction in chlamydia positivity and gonorrhea incidence. Wow, that's a lot of infections prevented. Okay, are there any adverse effects of EPT? Well, there have been no reported cases of allergic reactions to medication. There was no decrease in the number of partners notified by the index patient. In fact, there's an increase. And EPT is cost-saving compared with standard referral only. So even cost-conscious health departments and CDC project officers should be delighted. Okay. So why not use EPT for MSM? Well, a CDC document states, it is likely that high prevalence of comorbidities, including HIV infection and other STDs, favors traditional partner management over EPT for MSM. Really? An evaluation at the San Francisco City Clinic showed no difference in outcomes between MSM and heterosexuals, although the study showed no improved effect of EPT overall. And most importantly, in a randomized trial, the gold standard for science, EPT increased by 54% the partners of MSM with CT and gonorrhea treated in a study in King County. Who is the principal investigator of this study? Dr. Golden. Okay. So I believe we have a scientific and an ethical obligation to provide EPT for MSM as well as heterosexuals. Why? There's no biological reason why EPT would be less effective among MSM. Oral, urethral, rectal, and pharyngeal infections occur in heterosexuals and MSM. EPT has been shown time and time again to be additive to patient referrals. It does not supplant them, obviating concerns regarding undiagnosed HIV and syphilis. In addition, because rectal and pharyngeal infections are rarely diagnosed in persons who come back for testing as partners, a situation that results in underdiagnosis and reduced treatment compared to EPT, EPT is likely to treat even more people than the return visits we would be asking people to do. And gonorrhea and chlamydia increase risk for acquisition and transmission of HIV, highlighting the need for even more treatment among persons, including gay and bisexual men, who are at high risk for HIV infection, either acquiring it or transmitting it. Limited resources for STD programs do not allow DIS partner services for chlamydia and gonorrhea, so what would be an even better alternative is not feasible. And as noted earlier, MSM, especially of color, are the most highly affected population, so EPT for MSM increases health equity. And there are a few remaining operational issues, and I'm sure Dr. Golden will touch on them. Mostly, how do we do this well, not how do we do this at all? So we should continue to evaluate while we implement. And lastly, I really did want to take a moment to reflect on an example jurisdiction, one that happens to be on the responsibility of Dr. Matt Golden. So how's Seattle King County doing? Well, let's look at gonorrhea, the infection that benefits the most from EPT. Cases of gonorrhea doubled between 2011 and 2014, from 2,000 to 4,000. And yet, Seattle King County recommends, in writing, easily accessible on the web, that medical providers do not routinely use EPT in MSM. A coincidence? You tell me. Lastly, in referring to expedited partner therapy, Dr. Matt Golden stated to the New York Times, "Think of it like a vaccine. Would you want to keep an effective vaccine from gay and bisexual men?" Dr. Golden, I rest my case. And lastly, I wanted to thank these people who helped with these slides, although they will deny all association.
So I really appreciate an opportunity to address this issue. And listening to Dr. Merman, the big thing that I feel like I really learned was that if they give you those gold epaulets, you know what you get? You get a guy with a lot of chutzpah. So I'm going to be arguing. I mean, he's talking about my studies. I'm going to be arguing that EPT should not be used in MSM. And as we think about this, I think what we want to do is say, what are the questions germane to this topic? Is EPT good for patients and partners receiving it? Will it work? Is it safe? What are the opportunity costs? What are we missing? And then does EPT improve the public's health? And we need to examine these things separately in heterosexuals and MSM. So these data, this study is showing you a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials conducted looking at EPT in heterosexuals. One of the things that Dr. Merman neglected to mention to you is all of these studies excluded MSM. And what they showed consistently across the RCTs was roughly a 25% reduction in reinfection rates, with greater effect for gonorrhea than for chlamydial infection and consistent behavioral outcomes. We conducted a stepwise community-level randomized trial in Washington State. Actually, it wasn't a county study, looking at whether or not the provision of EPT decreases population-level morbidity. And what you can see is looking at that combined gonorrhea chlamydia outcome. Again, a study only including heterosexuals, you see roughly a 10% reduction in morbidity. So what I would say overall is that the evidence supporting EPT use in heterosexuals is probably stronger than the evidence for any other public health control program we have in STIs, with the possible exception of HPV and HBV immunization. Now, this is the slide. Originally, I was going to just show it this way, the evidence, summary of evidence supporting EPT and MSM. You'll notice there's nothing on it. But I'm an honest man, and I apologize. They changed the color on this, so it's going to be a little hard for you to realize. Read. But we conducted a randomized controlled trial of 54 MSM in Seattle looking at this. And Dr. Merman is right that EPT did increase the number of partners treated per index case in these 53 people. However, we're looking at a self-reported outcome in 53 people, which was less than 20% of the people who were offered enrollment in the study and less than 10% of the people who were potentially eligible. So it's an extremely selected population in a tiny RCT, which we ultimately had to stop for failure to enroll. We also did a study that Dr. Merman neglected to mention to you of 198 MSM in Seattle, asking them, how would you respond if you received EPT from a sex partner, if you received the meds? So 50% of the men said that they would take the medicines that were given to them. But when you asked those guys, they said that they would be less likely to then seek medical evaluation if you gave them the meds. So you will see a decrement in the number of people who are seeking medical evaluation among the sex partners if you give the partners EPT. Now, it's true that San Francisco has been using EPT. What I would say is all that showed is that some men will take it, but there was no benefit associated with it in a passive surveillance study. There is also an unpublished randomized controlled trial undertaken in MSM and transgender persons in Peru, which also showed an increase in partner notification and treatment. So again, I like to be an honest man, so I'm showing you the data even that Jono didn't. What I'd say overall is that what we have is small trials with no biological outcomes and some evidence to support the idea that the patient-delivered partner therapy will be less likely recipients to seek medical evaluation. So this slide is showing you the percentage of Neisseria gonorrhea isolates in the United States that have elevated MICs to cefixime on the right and azithromycin on the left. The blue bars are MSM, the red bars are men who have sex with women. What you can appreciate is very consistently, the proportion of infections caused by resistant isolates is very much higher in MSM than it is in heterosexuals. At this point, 5% of all gonococcal infections in the United States among MSM are resistant to at least one of the two agents that we would use for EPT. Where I live, that number would be 10% of those isolates are already known to be resistant. We know that if you give people a single drug, there's going to be a lot of treatment failure, particularly for pharyngeal infections. We know that if you give people a gram of azithromycin for gonococcal infections, you will court the development of resistance in that individual patient. So, Dr. Merman, as I recall, your agency said that resistant gonococcal infection is an urgent threat. What is that? Never mind. Now, I think there are problems with treating gonococcal infections in MSM with EPT. How about azithromycin? Dr. Merman has been talking about rectal infections we don't screen for. Well, again, this slide got a little bit messed up here. What you're looking at here is observational data from multiple studies looking at the efficacy of azithromycin and doxycycline for rectal chlamydial infections. Overall, across studies, the treatment failure rate with azithromycin is about 16%. The treatment failure rate with doxy is 2%. So 8 times higher. You're going to have 1 in 6, 1 in 5 people failing therapy if you give them azithromycin. So the take-home message I would give you, if you don't want to take any other clinical pearls home from the entire conference, is the recommended therapy for rectal chlamydial infection is doxycycline, not azithromycin. So Dr. Merman, unfortunately, has it exactly wrong what the implications are of not doing the screening in the rectum. But the implication is we need to make sure that we're always treating chlamydial infection and MSM with doxycycline, not azithromycin. So this slide is looking at what are the missed opportunities related to EPT and MSM. And again, unfortunately, when they switched these, the color scheme got lost. But they're looking at two studies, one conducted in 4 STD clinics in the United States with about 3,500 people, another in Australia. What you can see is that there is essentially no missed opportunities to diagnose HIV in heterosexuals and essentially no missed opportunities for syphilis. In contrast, among MSM who are not previously HIV diagnosed, over 5% will be newly diagnosed with HIV infection when they seek care as a partner for STD, and about 0.5% will be diagnosed with syphilis. Are you really willing to miss those diagnoses because the patient doesn't come in for evaluation? Moreover, Dr. Merman says, well, we can't expand partner services for MSM. Well, we can, and actually he gave us the money to do it on a trial basis in Washington State. He just forgot. So what we ended up finding with this is if you try to provide partner services to MSM with bacterial STDs using a low-intensity intervention, you can drive HIV testing among MSM with bacterial STIs statewide from 62% to 91%. We've shown that what we can do is increase the number of MSM partners tested for HIV through partner services for bacterial STI from 0.25 to 0.45, and that's a poster David Katz will be presenting later. We know that 21% of HIV-positive MSM with bacterial STIs are not engaged with care adequately, so reaching out to those people is an opportunity to re-engage them in care. And we know from data I showed you earlier today, for those of you who are at the syphilis talk, that about 50% of HIV-negative MSM receiving partner services for bacterial STI will accept a referral for a PrEP if you offer it to them, and at least 25% will initiate that PrEP. So what I'd say is we have a lot of important things on the agenda with MSM with bacterial STIs, and treating their chlamydia and gonorrhea is not the only issue. So, in summary, is EBT good for patients? Well, in heterosexuals, we have multiple RCTs that say yes. In MSM, no. Will it work? It works in heterosexuals. Will it work in MSM? Who knows? There's no data. Is it safe? It's safe in heterosexuals. It's not safe in MSM. You're giving them drugs which you know will frequently not work. There are biological reasons to believe that it will not work. Are there opportunity costs? They're minimal in heterosexuals. They're massive in MSM. Does EBT advance the public health? Well, we know it does in heterosexuals. We have a community-level randomized trial to show it. And no. It's going to undermine the public health in MSM. So EBT should not be routinely used in MSM with gonorrhea or chlamydia infection.
Matt. I don't think obfuscation and cover-up is encouraged. As I told you, he doesn't think gonorrhea and chlamydia are important, at least not for gay and bisexual men. I also think what we're dealing with is a question of how to get the job done. So first, no one's recommending azithromycin monotherapy for gonorrhea treatment. There are some operational issues we have to figure out about the best treatment for EPT, for MSM. But the problem I really see is that trying to be perfect, trying to say that our job is to only for MSM, we have to bring them back because they have to be screened for HIV and syphilis and all these other important infections, can be done anyway through other systems. But we can't neglect the fact that they have a potentially serious and even life-threatening infections that could have been treated and would have been more likely to be treated if they were part of an EPT program. But I think most importantly, I want to show one more slide. And this is really why we can't wait. This man is our hero. His name is Jon Snow. Right? 150 years ago, he had children and adults dying of cholera in London. He determined that it was most likely the water coming from the Broad Street pump. He took off the handle of the pump, even though it was 2 years before the concept of germ theory had even been invented. He stopped the epidemic. He didn't wait to understand everything. He moved forward with the information he had, and we do that all the time in epidemiology. And I have to think back to Martin Luther King, who said, human beings with all their faults and strengths constitute the mechanism of a social movement. They must make mistakes and learn from them. Time and action are their teachers. Are we DIS and epidemiologists who believe in public health? Are we physicians and nurses who believe in caring for patients? Or are we university academics who worship the tyranny of the ivory tower and the purity of perfection? Millions of gay and bisexual men in America deserve an answer. Thank you.
Now, that's what I call chutzpah. So there are a few things to point out here. The reason why Jono showed you those pictures is because he hasn't seen a patient in the last 20 years. I'm an HIV primary care doc. I see patients all the time, right? So I'm not the ivory tower guy here. I'm the guy who actually is seeing patients. Gonorrhea kills people? John, oh man.
Rarely.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. Come on. Raise your hands. How many people have you seen who died of gonococcal infection? All right, Gail has seen one, maybe. And maybe she just is sucking up to the boss. It's not really true. Right? So it's just simply not an honest issue. Now, so what kills people is HIV infection kills people. And occasionally syphilis causes very serious medical complications. And that's why those are our priority STIs. Now, in terms of the health equity issue is about making sure that people get the medical care that they need depending on who they are, not ensuring that everybody gets the same care. We need to have a system which is variable to address the needs that people really have. And in MSM, what that means is that we're going to be prioritizing things like HIV case finding and treatment, syphilis case finding and treatment, and the institution of PrEP. And this is, the STIs in our way are our opportunity to do that. So when people have an STI or contact STI, we want to see them because that's the opportunity to really make a difference to advance their health. And Jono and I agree on the goal that in the end of the day, what we really want to do is advance human health, even though he is really actually the one who's sitting in his, you know, little cubicle or whatever it is over at Corporate Square while I'm toiling away in a clinic. So thanks a lot for your attention.
Okay, we have two microphones on either side of the room here, so please come up, offer your thoughts and questions.
Hi, Denise Ligon McClure from Columbus Public Health. Perception is everything for people. So if a person knows that a heterosexual person is getting EBT, and, you know, they know that, and a person who's homosexual or gay or MSM, bisexual, is not, why would they not say, why are you discriminating against me?
I assume that's directed against me, that question. I agree with you that, you know, this is a difficult thing to explain, but the reality is we provide different care to different patients based on their circumstances all the time. So not every single person needs to be on PrEP, but some people do. And it's a resource-intensive intervention, and so we're going to direct it toward the people who will benefit and not the people who will only enjoy toxicity. We don't provide case management to every single patient with HIV infection because we don't have the resources to provide case management. We don't provide housing support to every single person with HIV infection. We provide to the people we really need. So what we have to develop is a public health system which meets people where they are at and which promotes equity and social justice. And that ultimately doesn't mean the same thing for everyone. It means trying to achieve the best outcome for everyone.
Thanks, Matt. Jono, you're going to... Bobby.
Hi, Bobby Vanderpoel, University of Alabama at Birmingham. This is somewhat reminiscent of the conversations we are or will be having with both point of care and potentially over-the-counter STD diagnostics. While on the one hand I recognize your loss of opportunity for people who are going to come into the clinic, what about the loss of opportunity for managing to get treatment to those people who you weren't going to get your hands on anyway? I mean, don't we have to think about those people? You should still treat all the people you can treat, but those that you couldn't get to come in, should we throw that opportunity away?
You know, honestly, that is the question. It does look like most EBT programs do what they're supposed to, which is ask the patient whether they think their partner will come in. And if they say yes, they don't offer EBT. They bring their partners in, and they get screened and treated. It's an additive effect of the people who would not have come in. Now, it's not completely clear that in all cases we're correct, but I do think the argument that particularly for MSM, where if they came in, only 15% of their gonorrhea infections would have been actually diagnosed, and they might have been falsely not given treatment, whereas if they were given treatment as a partner, as EPT, you have a little bit of increase in the number of partners treated than you would have otherwise. That seems like the balance goes towards the latter rather than the former. And this is part of our job, are we at the stage where we feel comfortable implementing EBT for MSM and evaluating it carefully while we do it? Or are we at the situation where we feel it's potentially too harmful to do that and we need to do some kind of research study to answer the question? I do think there might be some ethical questions about whether there's enough equipoise, but probably for people like Dr. Golden, there might be equipoise, and he should run that study. He had some trouble recruiting last time, but he did have statistical differences. So even though he had few patients, he found the result. And there is something to be said for honest scientists. Ones who...
There's also something to be said for informed ones.
Ones who when they run the study well, and when they come up with results, they listen. They listen to data, and then they respond.
Matt, a quick response, and then we're going to have to stop.
Okay, so I think the issue is exactly what you're getting at, is what is the balance of risk and benefit? So it actually isn't the case that if you come into a clinic, we don't treat you if you're a contact to gonorrhea, chlamydia, infection. We do treat you. So everyone would be treated who presents as contact to STD in any STD clinic I've ever been in. I agree that, you know, people of good faith can disagree on the balance of benefits and risks. I don't think we can disagree on whether HIV is a more significant infection than gonorrhea, chlamydia, and MSM, which for the most part is not a high morbidity condition. And I think in the end, we are going to prioritize HIV prevention over the treatment of what is mostly asymptomatic infections with no major morbidity.
That sounds like a perfect place to stop. So with apologies for time, please thank Drs. Merman and Golden for a great debate.